At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Well, second half, actually. No, it's Ron Case. Yeah. Casey wasn't Ron Gierking joining us from the Daily Racing Forum as we stretch our Daily Racing Forum correspondent hitting streak to four. Grenig, Hirsch, Privman, Gierking. Ron, you're batting cleanup.
Hi, Steve. How's it going? How are you?
I'm very good. Very good. Good. Nice to catch up. And there's been plenty going on at Woodbine. And, I referenced quite a few of the performances from last week as we were hitting, some of the highlights. And certainly Sherrill's Spite has captured people's imagination. What do you think? And what is Roger Atfield talking about for him?
Yeah, I haven't been able to get a hold of Roger this week.
Me neither.
The horse, and I hope everything's okay. But I assume he's going to be the nominations come out for the King Edward here. That'll be August 15th. I assume he'll be nominated anyhow. That's a race going a mile on the turf, 3-year-olds and up. It's like the prep for the Woodbine Mile, the local prep. It sort of replaced the Play the King for this season. And I would assume he's nominated to that at least. And really, there's not much else for him here in terms of 3-year-old stakes until the Ontario Derby in the fall. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him show up elsewhere at Saratoga, maybe. We're talking to Roger before the Marine that he won so impressively last weekend. He had no qualms with running him on the Tapita, and he said he'll even dirt. And, the horse did train all winter at Payson Park, and Roger's stabled here right across from the training track, the dirt training track. So, this is just a really serious horse, I think, that could probably do anything.
Well, it certainly people, right away, right with the debut win, people were excited. And then the follow-up, equally impressive. And now, as you mentioned, moves over to the synthetic and just as effective there. And I think the question then, people are eager to see if there's going to be a dirt opportunity at some point. And, the one of the funny sides of this, two for two, start to the career, it was the assumption that early on that he was, Ontario sired and that he would be a Queen's Plate participant, and that people had to be reminded that he was, Mr. Fipke had him drop in Kentucky. So no plate for Sherrill's Spite.
No, it's too bad. Roger's been sitting on the same number of record time Queen's Plate wins for like a decade, and he needs one to go over the top to put him as the leading Queen's Plate winning trainer of all time, solely, right? So, yeah, no Queen's Plate for him.
Well, we'll I'm not going to worry about Roger winning another plate because he something something tells me he's still got plates to win yet. Besides Sherrill's Spite, you also had a bit of an upset. And it's funny, you wouldn't think that Cassie and Barber, you'd be getting the kinds of prices you've gotten on stake winners for the two of them. But as it happens, over the last, 3 weeks, they've had some double-digit winners, including 260 wire-to-wire under Emma Jane Wilson in the Celine last week.
Yeah, that was like a prep for the Woodbine Oaks for some of the Ontario breds in the race. And yeah, it was won by the by 260. It looked like, the horse kind of looked like a rabbit on paper for the other Barber horse. And she just kept on going. And, it was kind of a slow race. The buyer came back like high 70s. But, it was an interesting race. And I don't know if, we had Merveilleux finishing fourth there. I think she'll come back in the Oaks. But I don't think that race will necessarily produce the Oaks winner.
Who's your early Oaks forecast?
Well, the Queens put the champion Tyrrell filly from last year with Curlin's Voyage, and she won the Fury in her last race, and she's going to be favored in the Oaks, I think, and she'll be stretching out to a more suitable distance. But Michael Matz has this this Union Rags filly that won a Delaware allowance race recently by 8 lengths, whose name escapes me all of a sudden. I can't remember her name, but I think she's pretty serious, and he can train her on the Tapita at Fair Hill. Sure. So he's been pointer for the Oaks for a while, and all he has to do is find a trainer to ship into here, and I think she's going to be a pretty serious contender.
We'll talk about some North Americans and U.S.-based trainers that are shipping up in a second. I got to mention Mr. Ritz's win in the Seagram Cup. I haven't had a chance for Josie Carroll and Earl Mack. That came on Sunday. And when I had the visit with Kevin Attard on Monday, we were celebrating Starship Jubilee's win and Kevin's first Saratoga success, I had to bring up his cousin and Jamie Attard and that Red Hierarchy. That's a horse going places, Ron.
Yeah, like I wrote about, it looked to me like he's like a young Pink Lloyd, the way he, flashy chestnut, speedy, and he's 2 for 2 now. I'm sprinting on the Tapita. He's an Ontario bred. I mean, he's not going to point to the Queen's Plate, which is on September 12th now, because they want to keep him sprinting, and the owner, Howie Walton, has another Queen's Plate horse, but it looks like he's going to be a really good 3-year-old sprinter here this year, and they might even stretch him out down the line later in the year. But he got the second highest buyer by a male 3-year-old in Canada this year behind Charles Bite when he won that Ontario Sired allowance against older horses last weekend.
Well, and that race just kind of came to our attention because it was part of the cross-country pick five, which we're going to talk about momentarily. And I was agog the way he ran away from that field. And, of course, his sire, who was campaigned for Norseman, for Mr. Walton.
Signature Red, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They who trained Signature Red?
I think that was Sid, Jamie's father, Sid Attard.
There we go.
Yep.
We'll keep an eye on Red Hierarchy. The action tomorrow, Ron, you've got, before we talk about the 9th and the 10th, which is a nice maiden race and a nice allowance, touch on the two stakes. You've got two-year-olds, and as I referenced, American Horsemen shipping up, and here's Steve Asmussen with Joy's Rocket, who feels pretty accomplished against this group of two-year-old fillies.
Yeah, she's a 6-5 on the line in that race. I mean, she beat two next-out winners when she won her debut in the slop at Churchill on June 28th, and she won by a nose. I mean, she's going to be, the only problem with her is she's got no synthetic experience, no work, no race. She might just be good enough to win it anyhow, because the field is kind of thin, right? It's pretty hard to ship up here, and I think a lot of trainers don't want to ship up a two-year-old, through hot weather, going across the border into somebody else's barn. So, I think she's no cinch, but you could look at a few others in there, like Silent Mamba, who beat Ontario Sired maidens first time out in kind of a slow time, and Cassie has a horse, a maiden who was fourth first time out on the grass at Churchill, Road to Romance. I think you can narrow it down to those horses, and but Joy's Rocket, Steve Asmussen, he hasn't shipped a whole lot up here in recent years, but he did have a base here back in 2008 and for a few years, and he won the My Dear with Juliet Spirit way back then for Satish Sanan. So he's well aware of this race, and it's our first two-year-old pick of the year.
I love it, and I love that you invoke Satish, our man. That's great for Padua Stables. Well, the other stake comes as the 7th and 4:20 Eastern. This is the good, the Greenwood, and $150,000 turf sprint. Just drew 6, and you've got a very heavy even money or lower favorite, Wesley Ward, Artemis City Limits. The man from Artemis, Ken Ramsey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean he looks like a standout. If you think he'll take to the turf, I mean he's 2 for 3 on. Well, his last win came on the Churchill Downs dirt with a 91 buyer, and then he won his debut at Turfway on the Poly. And his only loss was up here in a really tough allowance race, won by Lucky Curlin, who came back to finish second to Cheryl Spite in the Marine. And then the runner-up that day was Clayton, who was, you could argue, is the early Queen's Plate favorite. And Clayton came back to win an allowance race here easily. So Artemis City Limits looks like a standout. And, you know, even Wesley tried to get him on the turf last time at Churchill, and the race came off. But, yeah, he's going to be tough to beat.
You know, it's a very nice card that spills out from there. You've got a... Mm-hmm. You got an allowance group going to 1/16 on the grass as the 8th. And then, as I've referenced, we've got two legs of the cross-country pick 5. And it starts with that 9th. And, wow, here's a group of 12 going a mile and an 8th looking for diplomas. What do we need to know about this group?
Yeah, this is a wonderful field. There were lots of Queen's Plate nominees. And really, Belichick, I think, is going to take a lot of money for obvious reasons. I mean, he was... third and Cheryl Spite's debut, eight-length debut win. But he missed the break. He was actually favored over Cheryl Spite that day, but he missed the break. He raced wide. The main turf that day favored speed. And he rallied for third. I mean, he was beaten about 10 lengths, but he was only beaten about three lengths per second by a horse who came back to win. And now, you know, he's worked really good on the Tapita since 6 furlongs and 1/11 the other day for Josie Carroll. So he's going to like the stretch out, I think, from 7 to 9 furlongs. And by Lemon Drop Kid, and he's a full brother to a Wonder Where Stakes winner called Season Ticket. So I think he's really going to love the stretch out. And, you know, you could, if you're looking for a single along the way, you could maybe single him. But there are a few. There are a couple of shippers that that both ran against each other at Belmont, actually, in a 9 furlong maiden special back on July 4th. Red Storm Rising for Graham Motion. He was third that day. And then Malibu Edge was 5th in that same Belmont race. And interestingly, they show up here. And Malibu Edge has changed trainers, going from Shug to Rachel Halden. I guess he's going to stay here with the hope of running in the Triple Crown if he pans out. But those two horses, I think you both have to give a good look to if you want to flesh out your ticket a little bit.
One of the things you got to deal with here invariably, you know, the surface switches, and you've got horses like, you mentioned U.S. Army Corps, and we've got, you know, that equation. There's also, I think, how about, yeah, Belichick. So, how'd you pick this? 1, 2, 3.
I went with Belichick on top of the other two horses I mentioned: Red Storm Risen and Malibu Edge. And I like U.S. Army Corps a little bit. First time on Tapita. He's coming off a distant 5th in the Cheryl Spite's maiden win. So, he's a war front. I mean, there's a lot to like about him too. So, and you know, you might want to, if you're going 5 or 6 deep. Awesome Walk and Roll is a first time gelding coming off of a year plus layoff for Cassie. I mean, he's a 4-year-old running against 3-year-olds, and he was kind of well thought of early in his career.
What about Halden's other horse, that 5th season? That looked like a debut that he kind of ran in spots. And maybe with that, you know, look at her number, 3 for 5, with second-time starters with a gaudy ROI.
This horse ran very wide in that race that day. Five wide on the first turn and four wide on the second turn. So if you factor into that the 6 3/4 length loss, I mean, that wasn't a bad race at all. So, and you get the leading rider Hernandez picking up the mount.
And starts at 20-1. Some of that might hold actually in this group,
yeah.
A big bulky group. I think I'm obliged to use that as at least a B. That's a sneaky debut. Although, you know, that came. It's funny. On that occasion, was drew the 11 of 11. And here, at least, there's a couple of horses lined up to his outside. So maybe that, and I suppose Rafi might find him, you know, try to get him, you know, down, try to save a little bit of ground. It's hard to know what his actual style is, too, Ron, because he, as I said, he kind of ran in spots in that race. And it does look, he certainly broke well enough. It looks like he's got a little bit of speed, so I won't be surprised if he's involved a little bit more prominently with Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Takes us to the fourth leg, and as I laid out for you earlier this morning, the Woodbine ninth starts it, then the Monmouth Oaks, Saratoga ninth, the Whitney, and then back to Woodbine for the fourth leg. And this is a starter optional claiming group going the crazy mile and 3/8 configuration. the circuitous, you're almost on the Queensway in here. And the 11 furlong distance. Talk about this group. How are you approaching this, Ron?
Yeah, the first leg of the Woodbine Turf Endurance Series. And I mean, one thing that you should really keep in mind is Glenville Gardens going to scratch in off the Alsos. He's the first one on the Alsos.
Ooh.
He's a very classy 8-year-old.
Yes.
Coming off a big win, going a mile on the turf for 25,000, where he was well back and closed from off slow pace, really slow fractions, and one going away. Now, Sudatard trains him. I suppose he could maybe talk to nephew Kevin Attard into scratching his long shot in the race and maybe get in. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this horse gets in, and he could easily be the favorite if he does get in. So I'd keep a close tabs on him. I was talking to Mike DiPaolo a little earlier this morning, and he's got There Goes JoJo in the race, and he pointed out to me, he said, I really hope Glenville Dart doesn't get in. So, but I think There Goes JoJo sitting on a big race second time off the winter layoff. He almost won the final leg of this series last year, going a mile and 3/4. And then he came back to run third in the Valedictory, the Grade 3 Valedictory behind Pumpkin Rumble. So in his comeback, it was a second-level optional claimer going a mile and 1/8 on the Tapita, and he was only beaten 4 lengths that day. And that should set him up beautifully for this race. And Mike's thinking he's going to run a big race. And he's one of those English channels, that a very late developer.
Mm-hmm.
He won, you know, 3 in a row last summer as a 4-year-old, so I think he's going to have a good year, and you got Kimura sticking with him. So he's, you know, this kind of series too. You look at horses who have raced well in it in the past, like Camp Creek, and then there's a horse who won the series a couple years ago with Artistico. If you go back into 2008, he had some success in it. So these are, you know, it's a stamina series, and I think you got to look at horses like that. And I give a shot to Burning Man, the one horse who's
Save
he
on
ran
the ground.
In one of these legs, the final leg of it last year, and didn't do very well. He was seventh, beating 6.5, but he's since run well in shorter routes. So you got to give him a look, and I picked him second behind There Goes JoJo.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned Artistico, and you can see if you go back to his 2018 form, and where he was involved as well, and including winning the mile and 5/8 race, but it turned out that 2 1/4 miles was a little long for him.
Yeah, that was a race that Camp Creek won.
Yeah,
was back in here, and you know Camp Creek won the Breeder Stakes here 4 years ago, and he was 3. So. His last few races last year, Camp Creek's races weren't that good, and he's got a new trainer this year. So I'm not sure what to make of him off the long layoff. But Artistico back in the series after kind of skipping it last year because he wasn't really that they would have had to run him for the tag to get into the series early on. So now he's back, that he's a little older, and his recent form isn't great. So he's going to give it another go, and he gets Hernandez. So he's interesting.
You know, and looking at Artistico, you got a horseman that you only starts a handful of horses anytime. Sylvain Pion, and if there's a horseman in Ontario that sounds like he should be, you know, in the sulky at Trois Rivières, it's Sylvain Pion.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, Sylvain Pion. He's good with long distance turf horses. That's one of his specialties.
Well, these two races are really kind of fun, and not stakes per se, but very important. And given the intrigue we've got in New York with the two legs, the Whitney and the Alan Jerkins, being able to zero in on these two spots, Ron, will give players a big help. So I appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you, and we'll get you in a little more regularly as we campaign toward the plate and the fall, the Woodbine Mile, and everything else that comes with the fall schedule. The racing's been good. I mean, when I've looked up and watched particularly the stakes, and I'm in pretty regular contact with Trombetta too, and boy, Mike's like the jackal. He's like an assassin picking spots up there.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he's done so well shipping into trainer Darren Glennon's barn, and I think he ships in a little earlier than maybe most, and the horses are here for a few days, and they just have they've really done well together, him and Darren Glennon, and I would expect it to continue.
Ron Gierkink, everybody, DRF Gierkink, and Ron, enjoy the weekend, good racing, and we'll talk soon. Mm-hmm. Ron Gierkink, everybody,
and
not at all, Ron. I appreciate it, and that should be helpful, I think, for people trying to narrow down in the 9th and 10th in Woodbine, legs 1 and 4 of the sequence tomorrow in the cross-country pick 5. And, you know, the one race we haven't really touched on yet is the Monmouth Oaks, and we'll see what Nick thinks, because this group, I don't know, Lucrecia 4-1, and luring Paco Lopez, certainly a player in here. And you got Hopeful Growth, a couple of other familiar names. It's a group of 9, Project Whiskey for Butchie Reed. We talked to Butchie when he won the Delaware Oaks July 4th. So the Monmouth Oaks came up very good. Is Nick there? I think he is.
I am here. Good morning.
Nick, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there. How about you?
I've been up since like 2:30, so I'm a little punchy, to be honest.
You need a third hour coffee and a restart.
Yeah. Might be more like the hammock and a nap.
At early pick 5.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm going to wait. I've only been looking at the late action. I suppose we can talk a little bit about the last few days and last weekend. Some recap thoughts from you. What were you struck with?
Well, certainly not as if I'll touch on any particularly great opinion I've had. I think that we have generally been dealing with a racetrack that's been a little bit tilted towards speed, and that's been kind of annoying, just in general, because a fairer racetrack is a little bit more fun. But I don't know if there's been any kind of big path bias. I don't know if the rail necessarily has been good or if it's just been difficult to make up ground. That being said, you know, the Amundsen looked like the way the track was playing was supposed to be one of the biggest cinches of the week.
Right.
And just a really clever ride by Joel Rosario to get Funny Guy involved. And see, that's a great example of what a lot of us complain about. A lot of us complain, period, about pace. But, you know, that's exactly what we're referring to when we're saying ride your horses aggressively, because it didn't mean that Joel Rosario needed to go to the lead, but he needed to engage Amundsen early enough to weaken him so that he couldn't stay the course. And Amundsen is a horse that has had some stamina issues, especially if he's been confronted early, and that put him in a situation where he had to run harder earlier on than he needed to, and it hurt. And so, you know, that a little bit more of that would certainly be advantageous. You know, you want to talk about a race that just pretty much encapsulates the frustrations that we have with the way turf races are ridden. You had the one example on Wednesday with Ready, I think the horse's name was Ready for Prime Time, that wired for Linda Rice in a race where Javier Castellano somehow found a way to rate Psy off, and of course Manny Franco broke with Vici, and as soon as he saw other horses go for the lead, he immediately slammed on the brakes and let everybody else go, and those were horses that both needed to be forwardly placed. And then yesterday you had a dead last confirmed closer in My Heart Belongs to Daddy go to the lead and go wire to wire. I don't want to beat up on Luis Saez too much, because he did have some trouble in the first probably 10 strides of the race, and then it just became a complete disaster from there. But it's clear that in a lot of these races, one jockey is showing some aggression and is showing some interest in going to the front. And when that rider does, everybody else just grabs a hold of theirs. And it seems like an annual complaint and frustration point. And you try to handicap for it, but it really is borderline impossible. And so it does make you, in terms of wagering, just a little bit more skeptical and a little bit more afraid of really getting overly involved.
No, I think that's a reasonable assessment, and you know you certainly can pop in spots, and I think it's one of the reasons that the turf opportunities are so much fun, because you're obviously you're rolling the dice in bulky fields, and you know, guys are going to have to work their way through. I mean, give you an example. Yesterday, in fact, this came up already once, and it came up on Derby Trail yesterday late. I don't want to beat up on Benji Hernandez, but I sort of latched on to what was going to be a big price opportunity yesterday, and he was right with the winner, and was sort of, you know, looking for a place to go. He didn't need to look for a place to go. All he had to do was off the turn was just keep going forward. and I didn't really get what the plan was exactly, and it lost just enough momentum to basically doom the run. And I don't know. I thought I was onto something good, and I ended up losing the photo for third even, and so ended up with absolutely nothing out of it. And that's, you know, when you talk about frustrations, that's part of dealing with, you know, this racing up here. And it's a summer, you know, typical of any summer. But you just have to, you know, you got to take your shots and expect that over the course of, you know, between now and Labor Day, you're gonna get a few of those, and that's the difference, you know, for a plus or a minus season.
Yeah, without question. And, you know, I think the race that you're touching on was a sprint on the turf. And
the
one of the things about the rail being at 18 is that jockeys have to go out there with more of a plan, especially in a bulky field, because there's going to be traffic. And working out a trip, especially if you're going to be coming from a little bit off of it, is more difficult. And I guess there was some... maybe complaints. I've been reading different things about people believing there was some sort of anti-speed bias on the turf the first week or so. I mean, that seems like paralysis by analysis, in my opinion. I don't see that being the case. I mean, it's very, very hard for there to be an appreciable bias of some type on turf because turf races are all run as individual events and they're so pace dependent. And so that seemed a little silly to me. And then, of course, yesterday, I think two or three races were won in wire-to-wire fashion. So no concerns about that now. But hopefully we'll see. I'm a little surprised that the stakes are being run tomorrow with the rails out, but hopefully we'll see now on the turf on both surfaces continue to be what I thought were pretty fair setups, and the main track get that direction as well, because we certainly want everything to be a level playing field, because we get some good opportunities betting-wise, and the last thing you want to do is be beaten by the racetrack.
Let's dive in to this card and to the cross-country pick five. I brought Ron Gierkink down from Toronto to give us some help in that ninth and tenth, which are the first and fourth legs. And I was referencing, as we were waiting for you, I was referencing the Monmouth Oaks, which came up very good. Nice group of nine. So we'll weave those three races in as we talk about the action tomorrow. And the Whitney, obviously, Nick, and this big field in the Alan Jerkins, kind of the usual suspects in the Bowling Green, the Caress, and then another opportunity to have a referendum on Midnight Bisou. And as Jonathan was mentioning, I think yesterday or Wednesday, he's decided that he's not going to try to beat her anymore, Midnight Bisou.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm a killjoy, I guess, because there's been a lot of good horses over time that I was just never really all that wild about, and I feel like I've been in need of a horse that she beat way too many times, but I will have to say that she has just been incredible as a 4 and 5 year old now, and the amount that she moved forward after going to Steve Asmussen's care is incredible. She's supposed to win tomorrow. You know, I don't think that it's a soft spot by any means. I think the Vexatious is a very dangerous horse, and we've seen Vexatious take good horses right to the wire at Saratoga before, having nearly beaten Blue Prize last year on this very racetrack. And I think Vexatious comes off a very, very strong effort, went second to Monomoy Girl, so it's not going to surprise me by any means if she runs well. I think the plan is for her to be forwardly placed, probably positioned right off of Motion to Motion, who I thought actually held second very nicely last time at Churchill and had every reason to stop. So I guess point of humor is the other point of honor. I always mix those two horses up. Is the other horse? She seems like a non-winning type to me. She seems like a horse that maybe needs blinkers or maybe needs some type of equipment thing to happen, because she's just not. She doesn't finish. And it was weird that she sort of was moving well towards the finish last time. But I mean, I think even Steve Asmussen would tell everybody, as much as he's like, she's a Julie all along, she's the JV to Midnight Bisou's Varsity. And so if Point of Honor wasn't able to get it done that day, then I don't see it happening. So Midnight Bisou obviously is the one to beat. You're going to single her in the early pick five, play some backups maybe if you've got good opinions elsewhere. As far as the Whitney goes, you know, I've been a Tom's Détat fan for a long time. I'm now Stahl fan. I've always liked this horse. I've loved that they've kept him in training for as long as they have. The Stephen Foster felt like validation to an extent for all of us that have believed that he's this good all along. But, you know, you watch a race and then you look at the pace figures afterwards, you watch the replay again, and it's a difficult quandary from a handicapping perspective, because Tom's Détat had a very, very soft trip. He sat right on top of a very slow pace for the level, and he got a huge jump on By My Standards, who really was his other rival. And the only other horse in the race that had a decent chance of winning was Owendale, and he was so taken out of his game by the slow pace. So, you know, you figure, okay, well, Tom's Détat's not going to be sitting right on top of the pace this time, because it's probably going to be a little bit too quick. And By My Standards is going to get a more aggressive ride. Improbable is probably going to get an aggressive ride. I mean, if Irad Ortiz ever put forth an aggressive ride, tomorrow is the time on Improbable for him to be stationed right outside of Mr. Buff and ready to get the jump on a horse like Tom's Détat. So, you know, is he the horse to beat? I think by a mile, but I'm not certain by any means that he's going to win. I think Improbable can beat him. I really don't think anybody else can beat him. I think that it would take a pretty big leap forward for By My Standards, and, you know, I'm not altogether positive that Code of Honor is capable of winning at this level. I know he won the Travers, and I know he ran well in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He just hasn't quite looked like that horse since then to me. And I know he ran well in the Met Mile, but he's going to need to prove it. And the other thing that I have a hard time believing is that a horse is going to win this race on this racetrack from five or six lengths off of it. So I'm expecting either Improbable or Tom's Détat to get the job done, and I'll play my multi-race bets accordingly.
Probably, then maybe Point of Honor is a C.
Yeah, she'll be a backup, I would say. I would also use Vexatious as a backup, just in case there's a situation where maybe Midnight Bizu gets hurt pace-wise. I'm not concerned about the jockey change. I think that Ricardo Santana has probably very good rapport with her, having ridden her a lot in the morning. So, and he's probably a little bit more liable to keep her a tad closer early, knowing exactly how things have gone at Saratoga. But obviously 90% of your action goes through her singled with maybe just one backup ticket.
I personally haven't really dug into the races on either side. The two, there's the maiden special for three and ups that leads into it. The fourth before the fifth ends the early pick five and the pick four, and then a 7 furlong allowance for three and ups afterward, which looks to have a nice field itself, actually. There's a lot of good racing even between the personal ensign and then the start of the all stakes pick four, and you'll have the full analysis. You want to do anything in the 6, 7, 8 if there's anything that stands out?
The 6 looks like a chalky race between Mr. Winston and Everfast. Everfast, of course, who was second in the Preakness last year and nearly won the Blame at 28-1, of course, is still eligible for one other than. And so that's why he's in here. And you know, it's funny, there are a couple of horses running tomorrow, one of which is a horse, of course, who probably doesn't need a whole lot more attention paid to him. But Everfast and Hidden Scroll are running tomorrow. And these are horses that have run appreciably better races with Joel Rosario than with any other rider. And he's getting on tomorrow. I'm not saying that means that they're automatically bets or anything, but Everfast has done his best work with Rosario. He gave him a heady ride in the Blame two back, and he looks like pretty much the horse to beat in there. I took Mr. Winston just on the cutback, figuring he ran very, very well last time. He was involved in a very strong pace set by Live Your Beast Life, and Creed ended up coming up to catch them late in a pretty strong performance all in all. So I thought it kind of boiled down to those two. The fourth was a maiden race that you mentioned leading into the personal ends, and I thought that Searing Chase ran extremely well at Keeneland on debut. That was a big field, and this horse took real money, went off 9-2, and Rosario tried to open up off the turn, going 7/8, and that was a race where the pace had been strong, and so ultimately it collapsed, and this horse collapsed the race. If he hadn't made that big move off the turn, I don't know if it would have ended up turning out the way it did, and so he just moved at the wrong time. I think he's a horse that should move forward with that bit of experience. Dreams of Tomorrow is the horse to beat, and I think with the blinkers going on, he might be able to seal the deal a little bit more. I would say in terms of other win candidates in there, Uncle Moonlight is somewhat dangerous, I think, on the cutback, having gone long last time. People are going to bet I'm a Pharaoh. They can have him. This is a horse that sat on top of a slow pace two back at Gulfstream and actually lost very handily to an ex-Jason Service horse that had moved into the barn of Mike Maker. The blinkers are going on here. Not a positive angle for Todd Fletcher. This is not a horse that I have much interest in and would just be a backup for me. And then, I mean, getting back to the stakes, the Jerkins is really, in many ways, the race of the day. The Whitney is, of course, the race that you'll certainly want to watch. From a betting perspective, I think that you want to be involved in the Jerkins. And there are three horses that are going to be decent enough prices to me that I want on all of my tickets, and they're Shoplifted, Three Technique, and Tap It to Win. And they all have, I would say, similar running styles, and that they're all going to be looking to make up a little bit of ground. You know, I think the safest opinion to have in this race is to be against No Parole. And I know that people are going to think that No Parole might be able to get the lead. I'll be very surprised if Echo Town is ridden passively and that No Parole is able to just go and get an easy lead. I'm also going to be surprised if Eight Rings isn't asked for speed out of the gate. So I think this is a race that could very easily have a quick pace. I thought that Shoplifted made an aggressive, premature move last time around the turn and ultimately hung a little bit late. I think he can run better second off that layoff, and perhaps if able to lay back a little bit more in the early stages and just make that one run. I thought that Three Technique was a very interesting entrant in here off the layoff. Going back to Rebel Day, and of course the Rebel Day basically kicked off our entire struggle with this pandemic, and that was a day where the inside, as the day went on at Oaklawn, got progressively better, and Three Technique was very wide around the turn. Nadal obviously was helped by being inside, and so too was the Big Long Shot, who ended up second. And so Three Technique had nothing go his way. Now he's coming back off a layoff at a distance that really suits him well. He just seems very obvious to me on the cutback, and Tap It to Win is a horse that I've wanted to sprint all along. I don't blame them for having tried the Belmont off the big win early in the the Belmont meet, but this is a horse to me that's always been wanting 7/8. So drawn outside, he should be able to sit 3-4 lengths off the pace, and feels like John Velasquez will have him in a very, very good spot. The Bowling Green, I'm interested in seeing which of the two, or potentially if both, Mike Maker entrants go. I don't really think that Marzo has much of a chance. I think that Cross Border is obviously the more likable of the two. But all of these horses are getting a little stale in the sense that we've seen them face each other before. It's very hard to trust any of them. Saddler's Joy just seems like he doesn't know how to win anymore. Same too with Channel Maker. I guess Cross Border is sort of the up-and-coming one. Dot Matrix ran poorly last time, but I think was handled poorly in the early stages by his rider and probably needs to be a little bit more engaged. I love Rosario getting back on him, so I thought that he could be dangerous, but I do think in a way you can kind of throw a blanket over all of those horses. And quite possibly, one of the best betting races of the day is the Caress, where it's very hard not to like Delica, who really only had about an eighth of a mile to run last time, and when she was unleashed, she absolutely flew home. The race was running a driving rainstorm, and I'll Handle the Cash got an enormous jump on her from sitting on the pace early and then taking over turning for home, but Delica ran very, very well. I don't think the 5.5 will be a problem, as she was victorious at this distance two back, and I'm going to use her prominently along with Jakarta, who I just think Luis Saez might be able to get clear of this field, and she was on on a very hot pace two back, facing Newspaper of Record, so no shame in having tired a little bit that day, but I think she can run better, and she's going to be a bit of a price, whereas Delica will probably end up being the favorite or one of them.
Well, and Jakarta has proven to be really versatile.
Absolutely. I don't blame them for trying the dirt last time. I mean, she had done well on the dirt and then, you know, didn't end up working out. But you have to feel some amount of confidence right now in taking Mike Maker horses. They're all running, regardless of surface and distance. And so, I mean, she has plenty of appeal.
You know who doesn't seem impossible in here, and I didn't notice the price, 15-1, Saratoga Treasure.
She actually has a chance, I think, and one of the angles on her, and I'm a big fan of this angle, is if you're a Timeform US user, the pace figures and the sectionals in individual races are coded in certain colors, whether they're fast or slow. And slow paces are colored blue, fast paces are colored red, and I love betting the horses that were against the grain. And Saratoga Treasure was squarely against the grain of the pace last time. I mean, you could tell that even without a pace figure, but having looked just at the numbers, I mean, there was no setup for her whatsoever. 5.5 is probably always going to be a little short, but I mean, to think that she couldn't get a piece of it, absolutely. I mean, and I'm going to make sure that I include her on the as a backup, at least on a multi-race play, because she's run races good enough to contend, and you're going to get a really, really juicy price.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, and there is there a worse feeling in turf sprints than looking up and seeing the Generazio Silks that you didn't use? Nothing makes you feel worse as a horse player than missing the Generazios with the pink and green with the dots. It's unbelievable. And David Donk, of course, don't need to gild that lily. Does a tremendous job. A really terrific 12 race card tomorrow, and in addition to the races we've talked about with Nick, and of course Nick's analysis brought to you by Naira Betts. And actually, while we have a moment, Nick, and before we talk about the three races that are involved in the cross country, let me also fit in the contest. You're going to play in this Whitney Challenge tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to play and give it a run.
Well, it's a big buy-in, folks, and we didn't really get a chance to push this earlier in the week, but $5,000 buy-in and $2,500 live bankroll, $2,500 to the prize pool, and two BCBC seats, so two $10,000 packages, plus there's one Belmont Stakes challenge for next year, and four NHC seats. This is just Naira Betts members. And unfortunately, in Colorado, Montana, and Washington, you can't play. We're sorry. But take it up with your state legislature. Got to sign up by today. 5 o'clock is the cutoff. All right. So I'm going to send the link out for registration. I sent one thing out earlier, but you've got to get this done before close of business today. And if you have any issues, any questions, you can reach Donnie and the staff. challenge@nairainc.com challenge@nairainc.com if you've got any problems. All right, so we'll be watching for Nick on the leaderboard. Nick, let's turn our attention to the three races that partner up with the Whitney and the Jerkins. Things open with that ninth at Woodbine, and Ron Gierkink thought that small budgets might be able to really lean on Belichick in here.
Yeah, you know, I will admit that I've not spent a whole lot of time looking at these. I did listen to a little bit of what Ron was saying, and certainly if you can get started with a little bit more of a narrow focus, depending on your feeling in the Whitney, of course, the Whitney and the Jerkins being the two races from Saratoga, you know, somebody like me is only going to go too deep in the Whitney, and then I'll probably use four in the Jerkins, maybe three A's and one backup. But if it can give you an opportunity to be a little thinner as time goes by, I think that's helpful. I thought that Red Storm Risen was a little interesting in there as well. It's the 9th and 10th at Woodbine, right?
Correct.
Yeah, 9th and 10th. He ran in a couple of strong races at Belmont, so there's reason to believe that he can run well, I think. Belichick was of course, coming out of what looks like an extremely live race, having been won by Cheryl Spite, who came back and won the Marine last week. This is a horse I think will improve second time out. You don't often see horses that run third beat in 11 lengths and think, this is a horse that I could probably really sink my teeth into, but I think it just ended up being one of those races where he was a little overmatched, given how it ended up turning out. But I thought that there were a couple that you'd want to have some inclusion for. Strike the Top ran well last time out. Ollie, My Boy's moving to the turf. Not necessarily the best thing for a Union Rags, but this is a horse who rallied into a slow pace last time. And then, as I mentioned, Red Storm Risen was in a little, not really a comfortable spot, two back going a mile. And then last time out, made a middle move and flattened out. Probably wants to be a little bit more forwardly placed, I would imagine. This race is on synthetic. I apologize. I'm wrong about what I said about Union Rags. But, I can see if they can work out a trip from the outside with Belichick, he certainly can be very dangerous. As far as the Monmouth Oaks goes, I thought it brings together a lot of the horses that ran in the Delaware Oaks. And I think that the result of that is going to be turned over in here. I don't expect Project Whiskey to win again. And if you do, what you're going to have to take about a fourth of the price that you got last time. So this is kind of the ultimate last time was the time horse. It feels like there's a good amount of pace in here. A Piece of Heart wants to be forwardly placed. Project Whiskey, Eve of War is supposed to show some speed from the outside. I would imagine that you'll get kind of a forward position for Lucrecia. So you want to take a look at anybody who can be making up a little bit of ground. I thought Princess Katie ran well in the Delaware Oaks. I think that she's going to run a better race. I also thought Dream Marie did. I do think they were on the better part of the racetrack, being towards the outside. The inside of Delaware has been a little bit of a negative pretty much this entire meet. But I want to try Comical. And I think that Hector Diaz has ridden very well at Monmouth this meet. I think he's a guy that always showed some talent, and it's kind of been his coming out party. So I thought Comical two back probably could have beaten Piece of My Heart with a little bit more luck. I thought that she got lost position a little bit around the turn and then ultimately put in a good run. So I kind of wanted to try her at the price. And in terms of vertical plays, I think you want to kind of fool around with her, maybe in the exactas and the tries and in the multi-race bets. I'm going to use horses primarily that are going to be coming from a little bit off of it. I think the only pace horse I'd see myself using is Lucrezia, in large part because Paco Lopez seems to find these horses to the exact right trip, regardless of how the pace is going to end up playing out. But it is a super competitive race. It does look like a lot of fun, and we'll see if that result from Delaware holds up.
Well, and a lot of credit to Monmouth to offer $200,000 for this because the grade three, and they didn't necessarily have to have the purse at that level, and it attracted a nice group, including Ian Wilkes sending Randy Block's Market Rumor off the maiden win at Keeneland. It took some time, but she looks like she's going in the right direction, that filly.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, guy like Ian Wilkes spotting a horse off a maiden win in this kind of race is always notable. So not going to be any surprise if she improves. She's going to have to run a little bit better. But, I mean, as I was saying, if you want horses from off the pace, she certainly fits that profile.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it wouldn't be a shock by any means. And I think it's offering Kentucky Oaks points as well. So that certainly went a long way towards getting putting –
yep.
That's part of the reason why they put up some money and got a nice field.
Yep, they got 20, 10 – 50, 20, 10, and 5 for those points. And now back to Woodbine for the fourth leg, which is this mile and three-eighths two-turn with the dog leg and the interesting configuration of the Woodbine turf course. This is one of the this endurance series that ultimately tops out at 2.25 miles in September. What do you make of this group?
You know, the Burning Man's going to be the favorite, and he's a little dressed up in that he got a big pace to run at last time, but he's taken a big step forward for Josie Carroll, and you would think that being drawn inside, he can save some ground, probably just off the pace. And it's not so much whether you fully trust him. You look through the rest of this field, and there's just not a whole heck of a lot there. So it seems like a situation where he'll be very, very dangerous. You want to look through, of course, and find horses that have been successful going a distance of ground. Coleyville is kind of a now horse. He's improved since being claimed, and exits a good win, albeit against weaker, but feels like a horse that'll take to the mile and three-eighths without a problem. His prior turf races certainly aren't quite good enough to win, but I think there's still a little bit of room to move forward. And then, I mean, really, probably the next best horse that you have is There Goes Jojo, but this is going to be a difficult endeavor for Kazashi Kimura to save some ground from out there. I know there's a straightaway before you make that hairpin turn, but a little tricky in a field of 12 to get over right away, so it could be a little bit of ground loss there. But There Goes Jojo clearly is very good going long, narrowly missed at 1.75 miles last year, and will certainly take to the extra distance without a problem. So I think you'll probably end up focusing on the bookends there, the 1 and 12, and if you can get through the Monmouth Oaks and the Jerkins without putting a ton of horses on your ticket, it does look like it can be very lucrative, as it is every week. I mean, this is a tremendous wager, and there's pick fives galore tomorrow. They're pick five starting at Saratoga on the 1st, 6th, and 8th, and then the cross country, of course, will start with the 9th at Woodbine.
A terrific day of racing, really everywhere. And Nick, we'll look forward to today. Anything getting as we head out? Anything today that caught your eye that you want to especially stress?
I think the Coronation Cup's an interesting race. I picked Miss J. McKay. I wish that the speed horses on the inside that ended up getting scratched were still in. I think that she and Artie's Princess are both dangerous. Artie's Princess switching back to the turf off the good synthetic race at Woodbine for Wesley Ward. And, you know, I guess the only horse I will touch on is my friend Waylon Josie, who I picked in the 8th, and this is kind of the last opportunity for me with Waylon Josie, but she's a horse that has been very disadvantaged by her rider in recent starts. And with all due respect to Hemin Harkey, he's been a 7-pound bug for almost 2 years because he doesn't win a lot, and he's not very good. And so he's ridden her very poorly on multiple occasions, and she's getting a jockey change to David Cohen now, who's going to take her back and make one run. We have to try it. You know, it could be that Waylon Josie's best days are behind her, and her best days weren't even that good to begin with. But you got to give her one more try at what should be a pretty fair price. The only other horse in the late pick five sequence that I'm particularly interested in is I think the claim on Jerome Avenue in the 6th is outstanding. I think the Cantor Massies are doing an incredible job with their recent claims, and this is a horse who wants to sprint. Mile and an eighth is way too far, and he actually ran really well last time. He moved aggressively into a hot pace before getting collared late, so he's a horse I think that'll really excel cutting back in distance, and so I'm going to kick off the pick five, focusing there, and make sure that I include Waylon Josie along the way, the good Coronation Cup, and then the Nightcap looks to me like a matchup between the 3 and 11. Lido Key's the horse to beat, but Corey Scores had all kinds of trouble last time when she ended up second against comparable horses. So good late sequence, good card. Obviously tomorrow's outstanding, so A lot of sunny skies ahead.
Did Corey Scores got in? Did she get in?
Yes, Corey Scores got in. The 2 is scratched.
Well, okay. And speaking of scratches, we should reiterate that from the Woodbine race, the presence of Glenville Gardens as the 14 with the potential to draw in to that 10th race. Be aware, drive that point home of Glenville Gardens, who, when you have other horsemen, you know, saying, I hope he doesn't get in, that makes your ears kind of prick a little. So Glenville Gardens 9-2 for Sid Attard. Nick, thanks a lot. Best of luck tomorrow. And as we wrap up with Nick, again, the Whitney Challenge for Naira Bets customers tomorrow. You got 5.5 hours. Put a couple of friends together, $2,500 each, or put four together, $1,250 and each, and half to the bankroll, half to the prize pool, sign up by 5 o'clock today. And if you have any issues, challenge@nairainc.com for any questions. Donnie Nelson and the team will help you out. Nick, best of luck. We'll be watching for you on the leaderboard.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great weekend.
We'll stay right here because Hammer is standing by. He's back from his Big Sky adventure, basically tromping from Utah to Montana, Wyoming. Who could keep track? Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, back home, fresh and fit. Well, I don't know about how fit. I'm still in recovery time. But great to be back to sunny Southern California after just a great run. Good trip out there. Once again, I encourage people to take a little break and go see the country a little bit. And 4,000 miles, 16 days, came back great. It was good to get away and not really, think about racing for a couple of weeks. And I think I was talking to you earlier in the week. I said, I'm very pumped up now to continue on. Sad to hear about the Arlington Park deal. As you know, we out in California here can relate a little bit to, track getting shut down, Hollywood Park. A little different as we knew the axe was coming, and it just kept, it was like, is it going to be next year? Is it going to be next year? And is it going to be next year? I think it ended up going 6 or 7 years. And during those 6 or 7 years, the plant kind of deteriorated and upkeep wasn't done. And so when Hollywood Park did eventually close, it really wasn't in great shape, as opposed to Arlington Park, which I think every day of the year is one of the most clean, gems you're ever going to see in a sports venue. So sad to see that go, but I'd only been there twice. It was weird. I in 1989, when they had a pre-opening, my friend Ted Nicholson, who's now at who I work for at Kentucky Downs, he was working there, and he sent me a ticket. I never forget it. Hey, you want to come to the thing? Well, I was working at Monmouth at the time. And so I think it was in early June, if I'm not mistaken. But my first day off was like that day. And so I got in a plane. I flew to Arlington and went to the day, came back. And everybody was funny. Everybody goes, hey, what are you doing your day off? Oh, I went to the beach. I went here. I said, I went to Arlington. And that's when they knew that we got a wacko on our hands here. I flew to Arlington for a day off. But so I remember that, and then I was, of course, there for the Breeders' Cup. But some tracks are just not in your flight plan, and so I never got a chance to get back there. But we've all seen the pictures, and sad to see go. But we'll move on. Racing is shrinking a little bit, but as we've shown, and we talked about that too, Steve, we've shown pretty resilient. Is that a more resilient game filled with more resilient people from the race, the players, yeah, to the owners, to everybody, that we're still going strong here? And take the two cards. We're in the end of July, and you take the two cards at Saratoga and Del Mar tomorrow. Without much help, meaning horsemen moving around and shipping horses back and forth, they're filling them up great. The best thing that happened to Del Mar, which is the best thing that happens to a racing office, is a nice cancellation. And they got those 3 days off in the second week, and it's just rejuvenated, which, less is more sometimes. So they're able to put out a good card. Saratoga's got a great card. The racing's been competitive. There's been prices at both of them. And, you know, interestingly enough, I looked at Delmar runs 11 and Saratoga runs 12. So out of the 23 races, we're getting 8 stakes and 10 maiden races at there, which is good. Break a lot of maidens in 5 of the races. So, you know, I mean, I don't know how anybody of these bits and pieces of complainers complain about some little things. I don't know how we can complain when we got these two tracks as good as they are right now.
Agreed. And you really could feel, I thought, after the first 4 days at Saratoga, there had, you know, people were expressing, oh, how are they going to fill races and make it, you know, and keep it interesting and competitive and the wagering. And really, it really has. There's been momentum the cards. I mean, I've been focusing personally on the second half of cards, races typically 5 through 10. Yeah, just out of necessity, because they just don't have time by noon to make changes and adjust, you know, pick 4s and 5s in the first half of the card. So I'm being able to, I really, this week was the first time I really felt like I'm getting into a flow, and, you know, I've done okay. I'm waiting to hit, you know, one of the big multis, but, I thought this week, last weekend, Sunday, and then these 3 days, and then into tomorrow, have been really good. But I've also been engaged, Hammer, if you've been listening, I know you were away, but I'm looking at stuff, you know, with all these different openings between, you know, the tracks that opened over the last 2 weeks, like Presque Isle, and of course Colonial opened this week, and Finger Lakes a couple of weeks ago, and then what we're doing with Indiana and Canterbury, and the early parts of the week have been engaging. I mean, yesterday Saratoga paid $4,000 in the late pick 5. Indiana paid $3,000 with 2 races taken off the turf that were just obvious. I mean, you had a 1-2. You could single in one of those legs, and you had you had 2 horses to use in a 4-horse race that came off the turf. So it was a pick 3 essentially. The horse in the nightcap was the tough horse to come up with, but $3,000 with 40 horses in the sequence and 2 races were, I mean, you absolutely got by with 1 and 2 horses in your multiples. There's opportunities everywhere. If you dig around and look at sequences, there's places to bet and do well with, and especially these low takeout pick fives.
No, it's great. We're seeing a little bit. Indiana Downs has always been competitive. They do a great job there putting together the field tight. I do look at them, but we're seeing a little bit of a change in the landscape. How we've adjusted to maybe moving some races on, like you said, on those days that aren't usually as beefed up Mondays and Tuesdays and even Wednesdays. So that's a good way to. I'm glad to see we're adjusting. We kind of segue into Ellis Park.
Yes.
Who's quietly running their meet, and we'll have quite a gem in the Derby they're going to run. But on Sunday, there at Ellis Park, it's Kentucky Downs preview day. And through those tracks working together, I know Kentucky Downs gets some purse money over to Ellis, and so they worked out a deal where they're going to run 5 stakes on on Sunday, and they're Kentucky Downs preview days only because obviously they're on turf, and the winner of the corresponding races, we got those races for the turf sprint, the tourist mile, the ladies sprint, the ladies turf, and the turf cup. So the winners of those races at Ellis, when the races are run at Kentucky Downs in a month or so, they'll get the old free entry fee and starting fee, so it's like a win and you're in for that. So kind of gets us in the mode for, you know, we're pretty much close to a month away, about 5 weeks away from Kentucky Downs opening, and you know, I'm you know, excited to get there, and it's just a place that's just grown and grown over the years, and doing a couple things here to 5 years ago, it was probably that little country track where, yeah, a few people bet on it. We watched it around, and you know, not as many people watching, so not as many comments. But the last couple of years, as it grows, as the wagering goes up, obviously more eyes on there. And there was always a problem with the timing because of the weird configuration there. They go up and down and around, and then the far turn, which I call the Daytona turn because it's so banked as they come around there. And not only was that a problem, but you couldn't have a hard time making out your horses. I mean, even on site with binoculars, as they were kind of heading away from you for such a long time before they turned around. So there's going to be running numbers this year, which I know will be a big, big help. And, I mean, there's nothing worse than betting on your horse and, you know, having them go into the far turn and have, you know, hope for those green colors that you're rooting
where
for.
Where are they?
Somewhere close at the eighth pole, right. So going to have the running numbers, which is just huge. You know, you think about it, technology's moved a little bit further along. When you run a 5 or 6 day meet, you know, it's not worth paying the prices that, the tracks that run most of the year run to do the timing system. But Equibase has come up with a system and they're working on it right now. So we will have running numbers there. And, in the final stages of a handicapping contest, which initially was planned or thought of, nothing was really set in stone. We're going to try and do it for the whole meet. Didn't work out. So there's going to be a multiple day contest there. It'll be announced shortly. And the winner will be crowned the turf handicapping champion. How's that?
Nice.
So a few things going on for there. Some, you know, like I said, we're open on the 7th for 6 days, but wanted to throw that in there. So anyone that is a Kentucky Downs follower, check out Ellis Park on Sunday as they'll run very good competitive races, too, it looks like, there. So some of those horses you'll see in those races, even if they don't win, will come back and run at Kentucky Downs because you got to run if you got anything close because the purses are so big. But so I'm getting ready for that. And like you said, a couple nice races at Del Mar this weekend and also at Saratoga. The shared belief, you know, that's quite a race. As we talk about many times, it's all about timing, sometimes more than money. And obviously some of these guys didn't want to ship anywhere. But you got a race like this in your backyard, and it's now it's a points race. Am I not mistaken? Do they get points for this? I think they do.
For what? For
Derby.
Right, but are you talking shared belief?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what I figured. I know, you see the 100 and you go, you know, I don't think this one's getting points. But good thing, a couple of horses out of here. Obviously, Honor AP is probably stamped himself right now as the West Coast representative. And This is the perfect horse in the hands of the perfect trainer. Just John is just, you know, very deliberate, moves things along, knows what he wants to do. And if a race comes up and he decides not to go, he doesn't go and he moves on to the next one. But this was in the plan, the recent plan. Whether he's just out to stay physically fit and they're going to really gear him down, he should, you know, run very well here. I can't get this one horse out of my head. This is a new J.R. I don't really like the horse. I mean, it's a bet on every time, but I always consider him. I think he's getting better and better. He belongs on or near the lead a little bit more than they have had him, and he showed that last time. I think a month of 16th is a little in his little more in his wheelhouse. So we'll see what happens if he can run close to Honor AP, but you'll see a preview at least of probably the West Coast best chance in the Derby as of now in Honor AP, so take a look at him. But it came up good. You mentioned a couple of the maiden races this week, and I wanted to talk once again about Luis Mendez. And and so if you take a look at his running lines, if you go, but usually go back on most of his horses, you'll see the old DXD, Dixie Downs. And I did my duty traveling any racetrack or training center that's, within 10, 15 miles of the thing, the wheel just turns and we go. And so got to go by Dixie Downs. And it's funny, so there's I typed in Dixie Downs, and we're driving, and we're in St. George. We're driving up this hill, and we're driving around, and I get to a housing development, and it says, "Welcome to Dixie Downs." And I go, "Oh, man, this isn't it." So I end up having to call John Brocklebank, who runs the show out there for Louie. And I said, no, that's up the road in Hurricane. So we drove up to Hurricane and checked out the facility. Now, it was 120 degrees, I think, when we got there. I don't think they train now. In fact, I'm pretty sure they don't. But very nice facility. And if you want to see a little clip of it, go to my Twitter at Away They Go. And I actually posted something from there on the trip. But got to see it finally, you know, a nice big track and, you know, full-on facility there. They call it Legacy Park as well. So that's where he came, and that's where he trains. That's where DXD is, and other ones that came out of there. So you take a look at that. Jay mentioned a couple of his deals, but I know this Freedom Fighter, even I heard about this thing 3-4 weeks ago, and of course with Baffert in there. But like you commented, the field size. Been a little bit light in the 2-year-old situation. I don't think that's from any other reason than just slow getting around, not really knowing what the situation was, not really getting them cranked up. It's nice to see a 10-horse field. The Bing Crosby, you know, it would have really been great to see McKenzie running there. I think some horseman told me many, many years ago, if you have a good horse, the distance ones have one good sprint in them, and the sprinters have one good route in them. And I do truly believe that. It would have been nice to see him there. I think he would have been obviously very competitive. But it opens the door to some horses that are good, just haven't been quite the grade one material yet. I'm looking. I keep looking at this Any Port in a Storm from Blaine Wright, who you know, any horse to me that runs, you know, 7 and change and 8 and change, on different racetracks. I know the sheets have not been really kind to him. He fits in there competitively, numbers-wise, but not. I thought the numbers would read a little higher. But, I mean, obviously he's going to gun to the front, and I don't see anybody else in here running 7s and 8s and consistently as, you know, 107, 108, as this one does. I mean, just coming off a race of Pleasanton in 109. So he doesn't have to. He takes his, he can run anywhere. So the sprint guy's never been out of the money 3/4. I'm having a hard trouble not including him. You had talked about Desert Law. I think we liked him last year. He was the Carla Gaines had another horse in there. I remember this was the second one of hers, and really ran lights out. Whether he can do it off one race off the layoff is to be determined. But Fashionably Fast is a cowbred, and he ran a bang of second to McKenzie last time, and he's a smoker for out here in California. Wide open, you got Mark Glatt. Interestingly, I probably like the 3-year-old better than the older. You don't see a whole lot of 3-year-olds running in these races. Usually, like this horse would be back east for the 7-8 race there, but Mark Kepter here ran great in the Barrera, really looked good on paper, and is improving, so take a look at him as well. And then you mentioned the Hirsch on Sunday, so that's going to be your Bick. That was another highlight. I got beat Bick, so I'm in.
Good job.
So everyone out there, it's not that tough, guys. It really isn't. Just wait, you know, wait till the picks come up, pick the favorite, and go, right?
No, that's what, so far. That, yeah, that's because I'm not, you're not going to see me take a favorite too often. So
right.
I'm running third. No. I think I've got 3/3 or 4/3.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's it's a good little fun contest. Like we said, go on, pick one, and then all you have to do is win one, and you're in the big contest
in the final.
You know, towards the end, in the final, and you get September, a shot at winning a seat. So you know, why not? So
exactly.
Just Google Beat Bick.
NTRA.com/BeatBick. Easy enough.
That's the official way to do it. You know, I'm around them. Yeah. I'm around kids. They Google everything, so that's how I do it anymore. it's nice to see the races out in Saratoga. The interesting 5-race Whitney. We'll see what happens. I mean, Improbable scooted ahead of a, you know, not a great field, going 1.25 miles. Maybe that's his distance. Get out there and go. But he's going to have to do something similar you know, late close. He's going to have to spurt away. He's going to have to be in front by too far for somebody to catch him. But it's possible. I mean, maybe they found a niche going longer and longer with this horse. I know. I mean, he's been favored more times than any horse I think I've seen. But he lived up to it last time, and he's probably as sharp as he can be right now. A code of honor. But, I mean, Tom's the top. That's the story of the year, I think. This horse, the seven-year-old, I mean, as sharp as you could be. He's won at Keeneland, Churchill, Oaklawn, you know, back at Churchill again last time, and all commanding performances. And, you know, just as a fan, it's kind of cool to see the older horse get it. So it'd be nice to see him keep going. And I'm just going to mention, there's one other race, the Alan Jerkins. This race is always as good. There's no standout in here. I mean, I heard Nick mention a couple of horses, and, you know, I hate when he mentioned horses that I didn't like, and now I got to go back and look at those horses because he's always up. You know, I like Mischievous Alex last time.
Yep.
And he came off, first race off the layoff last time, and No Parole has just smoked him. But he was in a stalking position. I mean, they went eight and change. He was right there. He came up a little late, but he never stopped trying. And I just went back and watched the film of that race. I'm going to give him another chance. I like the fact that Ortiz gets on there. I'm going to be using him in my tickets. He likes 7/8 there. And I don't know. I always like horses that have won 2, 3, 4 in a row, and then they miss one. They lose one, and everybody jumps off the bandwagon like, oh, he's over.
Yeah.
So this might be one like that. By my standards, you know, he's another one of those horses that I follow along, and he tries every time. He wins 3 in a row, and then he gets beat. And then he's going to be tossed. He's going to go off 6, 7, 8 to 1. And he's been running a nice straight winning races for a long time here since this year. So he's just one of those horses. But I like those horses that are winners. And then all of a sudden they lose one, and he goes, he's no good anymore. I mean, here's this Mischievous Alex, 1/4 of 8. So he's a win type. So I like him, and gonna be on Derby Wars all weekend, playing some contests, and very happy to get back and be fresh and fit and ready to get back involved.
Hammer, looking forward to watching those Kentucky Downs preview races. I'm glad you touched on it. Big, good fields. There's also two allowances, two maiden races at Ellis. They've still got their state card the next Sunday, but including the Ellis Park Derby, but very, very nice Sunday card at Ellis. So I want to make sure people are aware. Mike Welch is going to give us a hand here the last 5 minutes and provide a couple of clocker report insights. Let's see what Mike's got for us. And otherwise, Rick, best of luck this weekend.
Well, thanks to you, Steve. Good to be back home, and we'll be ready to roll here very shortly. And good luck, everybody, in the weekend, especially playing that contest.
Hammer, everybody, and away they go. And if you missed his trip, go through his timeline, and had another fabulous walkabout up into Utah and through Big Sky Country, and very cool. That's one part of the country I've not had a chance to take in, actually, and I'd be very much curious. When Tina and I could maybe
I can
do that.
Straight where to go. That I can tell you.
Well, as we wait for Mike, I'm putting some final touches on some action today. After the scratches, there's a couple of scratches, as Nick referenced, out of the Coronation Cup today. The two inside horses, Carrick, which does still leave the other Wesley Ward in there, Artie's Princess. Always in the money from Amos. I thought it was interesting because there were some siblings, and Dam had some turf pedigree, and she was fast. So I thought maybe Amos was pulling a little clever maneuver. So I'll get my stuff up, races 6 through 10, and the pick 5 action up in a little bit. Mike Welch to join us for the last 3-4 minutes of the morning. And, of course, the Clocker Report, still plenty of racing in Saratoga and Del Mar, actually, to take the season package of the Clocker Report from DRF. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Mike, how about just a couple of ideas? You know, we do have the maidens tomorrow that you know, look okay to peruse. You got maidens going long on the grass in the 7th. We've got 2-year-old boys going short early. The Clocker Report always useful for that. How about a little Alan Jerkins thought or two? Some of the horses locally that have been working along.
Okay, and there's a bunch of maidens that are working good in that first race tomorrow, so just a heads up there. As for the Alan Jerkins, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if No Parole can repeat that last race. Tap at the Win is kind of a bit of a question mark here on the turn back. I know Mark Cassie is pretty encouraged that he's going to bounce back with a big effort. You know, from a workout standpoint, nothing extra special in here. 3 Technique and Captain Bombastic have worked pretty well for, actually Captain Bombastic worked with head and head with Pat on the back and went well, but, you know, that horse has been out of form, so I don't know if that, you know, downgrades a little bit Captain Bombastic, and, you know, the barn is kind of in a slump there, so I got to take that into consideration. I haven't seen the California stuff yet for on 8 Ring, so I'm waiting to hear on that, although I do know that Improbable is supposedly training like chow out there.
Well, and in fact, I brought it up with Jay earlier. Jay, just for that reason, to hear Jay's thoughts. And then, of course, you got 8, you got what? You got 8 Rings, you got Improbable, and then next week we'll deal with Uncle Chuck's presence as well. And actually, you've also got... we've got the filly, right? Where's the...
Yeah, Bob's filly is coming next week, too, yeah.
Yeah, we've got, yeah, of course, Gamine.
Yeah.
But there was also, who did I see? Oh, and the Caress, Mother as well. That's been that's been here, that stayed here, I think, with the Terra Novas, and the Terra Nova barn is hot, so maybe they get a little bit of
yesterday.
Absolutely.
I'm working on Saturday's report now. I haven't actually gotten to those last races yet to put my stuff in, so it kind of takes a long time to get through all those maiden races with all the works that we have to put into the system. So.
Mike, any reason to believe that that Bizu might be vulnerable in the Ensign?
Nah, I don't think so. She certainly has looked, you know, great here. Her last work was really good. You know, the one horse I guess that you could say might have a chance to spring the upset would be George Weaver, but you know, as good as that horse has run, Point of Honor, you know, she still hasn't won a race in a while, you know, and if she's going to, you know, not win right now, she's been beaten by some good horses, Grana, Dunbar Road, she's a Julie, but even those are not in the same league with Midnight Bisou, so it's hard to see her, you know, springing that upset there if Midnight Bisou, you know, brings anything even close to her A game, when there's no reason to believe that she won't.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that first race tomorrow, and I do see a couple of names, Olympiad for Bill Mott and some partners, $700,000 Keeneland Yearling out of, this is a Spitestown out of Tokyo Time, which was Mr. Hamilton and Shug. Very nice, but she was a turf router, but looks like this Olympiad's working real sharp.
Well, you know, his last work was in company with a couple others. I thought he was second best out of the 3 of them. But it was just a 3x blowout. I haven't seen much of the horse. We don't have much on that horse. He was training up here before we got here. We do have a couple of works on him. But I think there are others in there that have probably been, from a workout standpoint, are doing a little better. But, you know, it's a tough race to really settle in on anything too close, because there's 3 or 4 of them that have worked so well that there's not a lot separating them on their workout reports and workout impressions. And, you know, the difference there will be how they break and, you know, what kind of trips they get, as is a lot of times the case with these in these baby races.
No doubt about it. Get your hands on the Clocker Report for either the weekends or individual or for the rest of the season. Mike, good luck. We'll see you out there this week.
Okay. We're looking forward to it.
Mike Welch, everybody. DRF.com/clocker. DRF Welch, DRF Gear King, DRF Privman, DRF Hirsch, and DRF Grenig, as well as Hammer and Nick Tamaro this morning. Casey back in the studio. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Good luck tomorrow. Beat Beck. Mischievous Alex for me tomorrow in the Jerkins. And then I think I'm going to do the Clement Hirsch, all right, for Sunday. I'll make a decision in a little bit this afternoon. I'll get my second half of the card action up at the website momentarily. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, Whitney Day, and we'll talk to you Monday morning at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years.